side.
But there's also...
Oh, the school's on the east side, right?
Well, it's on the west side of the development, so the east side of, close to the east side of King Edward.
You also have to understand, the school division has land on the west side of King Edward Street that it bought a number of years ago. It's also one of its other priorities for this area. So this likely, I mean, the school division supports the idea of the west side of King Edward being residential. And that's where they, and their school site is located south of Commonwealth to Inkster Garden Drive. So it's between the two major collector streets. Perfect. You know, from the point of view of connectivity.
David, I'm just going to say that looking at the southwest corner of your development, you know, and I recognize the fact that you're providing choice for those homes that don't have a sidewalk. I'm going to ask that I'll concur with the administration on this particular point and leave it that we're having 31, leave A in there, take out B, and with the revised clause. So basically, you're paying for the 5 meter width active transportation, 3.5. Or pardon me, the 3.5. Is it 3.5?
So 31A is to be amended too?
No, 31A is, that's the pavement in King Edward. That stays
five. Oh, sorry, okay. And then so what are we saying, 3.5?
We're deleting B.
Oh, I'm saying 3.5.
The 3.5 is clause 46.
Yeah.
Okay, so for 31, I just want to be clear, we're deleting B.
Yeah.
And we're adding that extra piece that if the development does not require King Edward, .. That's it for 31. Okay.
Let's move on.
Clause, yes, item 6, clause 33, we dealt with already. And clause, item 7, clause 30.
I have to take a 30-second recess, and I really need to be here for this.
We're actually getting close.
Well, we're close with Roy's stuff, and then we start into Donna's.
Thanks, Kim.
It has happened to come.
Oh, yeah, no, I'm really good, yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
No, nothing. No, she's not talking.
But I can leave in a couple minutes. We're just about done mine. I can go home and let two dogs.
Okay, we're on what number? Clause 33?
Yes, clause 33 we've dealt with already. Where we added a clause that the city will reimburse the developer 50% of the cost. That is the clause that also contained the typo, the 2,000 millimeters, just to strike that.
What should 2,000 be? 200?
200.
Okay.
Oh, this needs to be changed to 200?
200, yeah.
Item 7, clause 35, on page 33, we're okay with the developer's request to make that 75%. So we'll take out the words "the full" and replace it with 75%. developer shall pay to the city in cash on demand 75% of the cost of the installation. Clause item 8, clause 36. This is 25% of the cost of traffic controls, et cetera, at Chief Pegasus Trail.
Clause 8, 36. Which is a companion clause to clause 22, which you already dealt with.
Right. So you're saying strike 36?
Well, if that's what the council wants, did with 22.
They're
companion clauses.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
They go together.
Yeah.
Right, was that with the channelization?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
And this is the signals.
Yeah, right.
So we're striking clause 36.
Yes. Okay, item 9, clause 37, we've dealt with already. The developer shall pay to the city in cash on demand 50% of the cost of railway crossing protection. Item 10, clause 38.
Yeah, we got that.
75%?
Yeah.
Okay. Clause 40 we've dealt with, I believe.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, we did.
Yeah. Yeah. We accede.
Green lanes were already in.
Yeah.
So we'd like it deleted. They were. Turning lanes we're speaking of is this turning lane here and this turning lane. Those have been built by the adjoining developer. Are we?
Okay. So the clause says that developer shall know. City construct in Portland Cement.
Yeah, that's right.
North now they're saying yeah. At the intersection of Jefferson Avenue and Old Commonwealth Path.
Oh, okay. No, okay. This one should be this.
We're suggesting that the Old Commonwealth Path component be deleted.
Yeah, we're going to delete that. Yes.
And it would be the southwest and northwest corners of the intersection.
Okay. So how should it be?
So it would be the northwest and the southwest corners of Old Commonwealth Path and Dr. Jose Rizal.
Okay, so we're adding words after intersections of Jefferson Avenue and the words go in there?
No, you take out the word of, you take out Jefferson Avenue and.
Okay.
And it should be the southwest and northwest in the second line.
Shall at no expense to city construct in Portland cement concrete pavement right turn channelization in the southwest and northwest corners of the intersection of
Old Commonwealth Path.
Sorry.
With doc, the rest of it's fine.
Yeah.
Okay.
Changed it to the northwest and southwest.
We say for now on just DJ for Dr. Jose Rizal. Between Chief Pegasus Trail and Dr. Jose Rizal.
Clause 45 and 46 we've dealt with, the active transportation clauses. Oh, sorry. Oh, 46. Yeah. 46 is the one in King Edward.
Just a clarification on the King Edward responsibility. Is that responsibility to build the
that's as a compromise that will, that's what we would like to suggest, and then it interconnects with an internal system which takes you to the school site.
Can you restate what you said? Just
that the active transportation corridor that we would be responsible for is limited to between
commercial.
Instead of going all the way to Chief Peguis.
Because we have the internal connectivity up to Chief Peguis.
What was the city asking again before?
Oh, no, I just clarified. Instead of all the way to Chief Peguis.
So it's from Addison Drive to where? To,
No, it'd be
commercial to Old Commonwealth.
Old Commonwealth.
Okay. I just want to clarify number 45. We had already made a change saying the city shall reimburse the developer 50% of the debt costed above work. So that's not changing.
Right.
Just the change is 46.
Right.
Okay.
Okay. I'm okay with construct your active transportation on the east side of King Edward from commercial to Old Commonwealth.
So taking out the
Yeah. Okay, so, councilors, that puts a wrap on the Public Works transportation clauses. Roy deserves that.
So there's nothing to do with numbers 14 and 15 here?
We're going to carry on with Donna now with those items.
I have given the copy of our proposed revised wording to those clauses. It should show up as an email from myself to Dave Pybeski. For the first one, the developer was questioning our granting only partial credit. Okay, we've done that on most, well, not most, we've done that on all developments of late. The reason being is when we used to do retention ponds, there'd be kind of a pond, not this sausage-shaped linear lake, and the corridor has been shrinking as they started to elongate them. So all we're getting is this continuous slope from the edge of the pond to the residential property with one little flattened area of pathway, and we don't think it's fair for a single-use sloped property to give full credit if we're giving full credit for a multi-use type site. So what we've been recommending on other applications, and it's partially to try and encourage the developers to make it more of a linear experience as opposed to this linear channel. So we've been recommending 50% credit. And so what we did, one of the things we thought we should do instead of leaving it nebulous as to so that he doesn't end up getting 5% credit, is actually stating that rewording what was in the proposed clause to state that in tabulating public reserve dedication, only 50% credit shall be granted for the linear, sorry, I have something in the way here, linear parks along retention ponds where the slope grade limits multi-use options. So if it happens to be, if it opens up and widens out to another area, we'll give full credit. We're not trying to steal money. We just want to recognize that we don't get as much usability on that piece of property, the specific application of which shall be to the satisfaction of the Director of Planning, Property, and Development. So they may say that, yes, we can do it on this section, no on that section. So we'll leave that up to, and it'll be discussed in advance with the developer. So that's our proposed change of wording.
Ask your question, Donna. What's your slope requirement? Like, what's your slope number?
It can change.
But what's acceptable in the standards, I guess?
Well, you know, usually our maximum for a small area of park would be 1 in 4. And that's a maximum for maintaining. These are usually 1 in 7, but we would never have a whole length of a park at any kind of a slope. Usually 1 in 7 is what the retention ponds are designed at.
Which is a far less slope.
That means they term 7 to 1? Like 7,
yeah,
across
7
1
across
up?
7 across 1 up.
Okay.
So keeping in mind that a cross slope for an accessible path is 2%, which is 1 in 50. So it's considerably more than a path. So.
But when we construct our paths, we're constructing our pathways to meet the requirements. We'll have swales on the downside of the slope. If you want to encourage developers to create an experience there, I'm suggesting give us 100% credit for the space. We'll create an experience.
If you look at any of the
developers. Because the other option, if you don't do this, then you're going to have developers saying, well, I'd rather just have all of that great looking space, private lots, and no access in there. And my clients believe in the accessibility and interconnectivity of the neighborhood. They haven't done this. They've preserved more than 50% of the lake area as accessible space. It will, and their intention is to make it beautiful.
And so the experience will be the visual experience, the passive nature of it. There'll be a pathway, there'll be sitting areas within that, there'll be landscaping.
Well, I guess if
given the additional expenses we're bearing, you know, we're certainly providing the city greater than 8% plus the cash in terms of improvements we're doing, which have not been commonly undertaken by developers in the north end of the city.
Not in the north end of the city, but we have to look equitably around the city. And I guess if you compare the linear parks that are going in current developments as compared to, say, River Park South, where you've got usually there's almost a park setting and then there happens to be a retention pond, as opposed to we're basically it's just making a retention pond more of a usable space, but it's not creating anything more than just a path. So I mean, I'll leave it to the councillors. It's just that's been a consistent approach we've done with any application that's come forward with retention pond lands.
Okay. Let's leave 48 as proposed by Donna.
The next one had to do with fencing. The wording that we had, and it wasn't clear to me till we met with the developer this afternoon, didn't actually articulate properly what we were after. So I know they have an issue with the wording, but I just wanted to make sure it was clear that our expectation was that there'd be uniform continuous fencing that went along any stretch of park that was a linear park where you'd have a pathway adjacent to someone's backyard, and any others that would be applicable throughout. So if you had an open area with a park, we didn't expect it to be fenced. But for the linear parkways where you're on a retention pond and a backyard, we would want that fenced. And partially what ends up happening is if it's not fenced, the city's asked to put fencing in, or we get that, we call it the missing tooth look, where you get, you know, a wood fence and a chain link fence, and so just the overall aesthetic is lost.
So that would be fencing.
No,
here.
That's not a, well, because you can probably put the path more than 10 feet away there, potentially. I'm talking mostly around where we'd be looking at a continuous fencing would be, and it depends on how you can position the path is behind. Allowed into it. Now, the one thing I wanted to clarify, because I know someone had suggested, could we just do bollards? We haven't stipulated this type of fence. If the developer wanted to put in decorative bollards as a delineation, that's an option too. Or if they want to put in fence with gates. We're not trying to preclude access to the park. We're just trying to determine an edge. And part of it is when you're on a slope, it's amazing. It's bad enough when it's a flat area. People tend to creep into the parks and encroach, and then we have to go and enforce property lines. But when it's on a slope, people just kind of don't pay attention. Things just kind of move along, and eventually they're right up to the path. And it just makes it hard for us to maintain the integrity of the park. So that's why we've been asking for it. It's consistent with what we did in Amber Trails. It's consistent with what we've asked for in Waverly West. So it's been a consistent ask. Okay. What we did put in there for the developer's benefit was the developer shall erect or cause to erect, so that they're not forced to put it in. They can put that onto the builder so that they can pass off the responsibility.
From our perspective, it's not an issue of passing off responsibility. But if we build park spaces don't have chain link fences along your parks as exist in Amber Trails. I don't want to build parks and then stuff and create buffers to them. I do agree, though, if we have pathways which are within 10 feet of a residential lot, or if we have a play structure that's within 10 feet of a residential lot, we'd want to buffer that with a fence. But otherwise, I mean, we have two fencing standards that we have here. There'll be ornamental cedar tone wood fencing, and we'll be specifying where they would be, or if there is any fencing that is to be included in here, it has to be tubular steel, ornamental steel fencing, anodized as a dark gray color. So we want to have the flexibility to encourage our builders adjacent to parks not to fence. And the homeowners not to fence. Now, we've done this in other developments, and they haven't fenced. They haven't fenced in River Ridge, which we did most recently in your area overlooking the park. And that, to me, makes a better neighborhood than fencing in our park spaces. I do agree that when the pathway is very close to a residence, people will want to fence in any event just because of the proximity of others walking by their rear yard. So we agree with the administration in that regard.
The problem we get with that is if you fence 3 yards and then not one, that person's going to be coming and saying, how come I didn't get a fence? And if you don't have consistency, and we have, the reason we put this in with the offset 10 feet from a property line is we're dealing with this in Amber Trails where it wasn't clear and people are saying, how come they got a fence and we didn't? And they're on a side yard. Because we've never had any complaints about fencing going in. The only complaint we've had is that it hasn't been kept up to the standards that people want. We haven't had any complaints about the fencing where there's a pathway in behind. And I guess my concern with taking out the requirement is that if it's left to the discretion of where a pathway is and it meanders, then you might have 3 properties with a fence, 2 without, 3 with, 2 without.
We wouldn't do that kind of design. Give us credit for something. I mean, if we have this pathway, if it happens to be pushed to the edge, we will fence that edge. This is just illustrated for conceptual purposes. I mean, we're concerned about his image as much as you may be from the point of view of whatever your concern is about fencing the property in the park. And
part of it is the overall look and feel of the development and the look and feel of the park, so that there's a consistency and there isn't this choppy look.
We have a huge amount of concern about that, too. But I thought when you talked to me earlier about this, your concern was that people, if you didn't have the fence, people would be putting their garden sheds in potentially
that's part of it.
Lands.
Part of it is that people tend to encroach beyond their property line. Part of it is that people say that if you don't have some sort of delineation that people don't know where their property line is, and they're coming in from the park into their private property. So this is just what we've experienced in other park developments. So.
We would prefer not to that there not be fences. However, if in the builders that we deal with, it, if they want to put fences there, understand, you know, needs in some cases for some privacy fencing. So what we have done in approved in River Ridge and it worked, or sorry, in Dan Hall Estates, it worked very well, is we included tubular steel fencing, but with sections of it as being cedar tone fencing to provide privacy spaces adjacent to patios or barbecue areas. It looks attractive and it works. Every fence has to be approved by our landscape architects. Every building plan has to be submitted to our firm for review and approval prior to the builder making the application to the city. We've worked out these arrangements in the past with other developments. They've worked very well. The builders who have been participants in other developments know us and they like this. We have design standards that deal with all of these things. If, you know, if there's a pool, there's a fence required, correct? Could be.
And that's what we're trying to avoid.
Well, I don't.
And it's not. It's because we get the complaints. You won't get the complaints after, but the city and parks are the ones that get the complaints that they want someone to pay for their fence because someone else had a fence paid for. So if you're leaving.
Yeah. It'll be very clear in our development agreements. We have fences that the developer is going to put in. And we've indicated to the builder, prospective builders, here's our expectations if there's fencing that you're going to put in, and here's the standard for it. So it's not going to be unknown where that responsibility is. I think it's something that we as developers have a very, very strong concern that that we make this development and our park space transition to our residential areas very attractive, and we control not only every building look, but we also control what the fences are.
The issue we've experienced is not right after the development, but 5 years later when people have moved and new people move in and they don't know what happened initially, they don't have a copy of the original agreements, and they're wondering why they didn't get a fence. This is where it starts to come up. And I think if you create a style of fence and you've got a gate so there's still an access point, so it's not, you're not cutting people off from the park, you're just creating a way of separating them from the public from the private, so there's a clear delineation of who owns what and who's responsible for what and where people can be. It just helps provide clarity.
Yeah, we don't disagree with the concept. I'm just saying that what we wanted to do is to limit it to where we have pathways within 10 feet of the property line or play spaces within 10 feet of the property line. If there are individuals who do not want a fence and want an open view of the park,
is it really a park, David? It's a walkway.
Pardon me?
It's a walkway.
If there's walkways, we'll require fences if the walkway is within 10 feet of the property or if there's a play structure within 10 feet of the property. If the walkway, now there would be a different elevations. We have a lot of fill material that we do not want to haul off the site. We'll have walkout basements along the park area. We're going to grade that so that it works with city standards, but also deals with the issue of addressing how we're going to ensure that the fill is going to be utilized on site. It's a design detail. I do not want to be placed in a situation where I have to build fences or I'm specifying fences have to be built if people don't want fences. I want the flexibility. I can't see in any circumstance that somebody has come to city planning or parks and saying, I want a fence, build me a fence. Because it's very clear in our project, have you had this request in any of our projects in River Ridge or Van Hall most recently?
River Ridge.
provided fences that back onto the walkway. Right. That's exactly what I'm saying here.
And that's what we're asking.
The linear park is intended to be a walkway.
So what's wrong with my wording there?
Yeah, so at the end of the day, I'm hearing Donna, and you're saying the same thing.
Well, he's trying to take out the wording that says on the properties behind, oops, I just lost it. Because we had it on all the properties that back onto a walkway corridor. We're not talking about all parks, just the ones that are intended to be a linear walkway. And because we have a couple of areas where it's a little bit wider, where we just want to make sure that if a pathway comes in and it's within 10 feet of their property line, they're also getting a fence.
Hey, David, what were you saying about the 10 feet?
My preference would be is to leave the idea of fencing here an opportunity that if individuals want a fence, they have to do a fence. Have the park visually appear as part of my yard.
I'm of the opinion of you got to give people choice. So I'm going to leave it with the way the original.
Well, the original clause doesn't.
What's the original clause say? Hold on.
Doesn't give people a choice.
In the event that people do put fences up, they'll be nice, and you will specify what kind of fence.
Have the specifications for the fence, yes.
There will be issues of privacy where people don't want to see others walking by and walking into their yard.
I know. And it exists in other projects that we have. We have fencing in where the fencing is. It looks quite attractive. And typically where the fencing goes is exactly where the areas that Donna is speaking about, where we have pathways that are in close proximity to where a residence is. Once the pathway moves away from the residence, you know, people don't want a necessarily fence. They just want the fence from a privacy point of view, or if they put a pool in, which is a possibility here. But if they don't have a pool and they want that open space feel and to be able to look not through a fence or over a fence to the lake or something like this, why shouldn't they have that opportunity?
I agree. That it would be problematic with what you're proposing, I think.
I'm going to just say that our only concern is that in the future, if it's only on certain properties, how do we guarantee 10 years down the road that the same style of fence is going to be put in these spaces in between? Are we going to end up with wood fence, chain link, and a whole mishmash of fences all along?
We're not providing chain. I mean, we'll give you our fence
standards. I mean,
you can include it as part of the
not
a,
you,
a zoning agreement.
But future people who come in, they don't have a fence, they want to build their own, and they go, why should I have to build
we'll
a fence to
fence
your
standards? And you can include it as part of the zoning agreement.
Can we make people build a fence in the future to a certain time?
Yeah.
We haven't voted on it yet.
Yeah.
I just had one question, though. Like, so when a person looks at buying this property, and they decide whether or not they want the fence or not, right?
Yes.
So if somebody asks the question, well, how come they got a fence and I didn't, you just say, well, that person paid to have a fence. Right?
We
if you want a fence, you pay for a fence, and in the zoning agreement, it's a standard.
We're building fences in certain locations that are part of our landscape design. And then we're giving people a choice if they want to not look through a fence or over a fence to the green space to look into it as part of their aesthetic interest. We want that ability for them. But we specify two fence types. They're not chain link. They're very high quality fences. And the fences that we specify, if they're wood, they will they last years. I mean, it's comparable to the fencing that we designed in River Grove, which is 38 years old, still standing, still attractive. So
that was put in as a continuous fence, was it not?
It's the standard. Yes, I'm saying in places where we did it, you know, we separated the commercial area from fencing. We separated the residential or the boulevard street from fencing in that case because we had our lots backing up. So we wanted to make it attractive. But our fencing is not chain link. I guess what I'm trying to tell you, Donna, it's a high quality fence.
Well, and I don't.
And if somebody puts it in one lot and doesn't put it in another lot, it's not going to look odd.
I just know that in Sage Creek, Waverly West, most of the other developments, that's how it's been done. Nobody's ever quibbled about it. Most people just, as long as you say you have a fence, they accept that. It keeps all the lines from being blurred.
Waverly West, though, they don't have sidewalks where they should do, though.
Those are in the front, though. In the back, they have the walkway.
Yeah, yeah.
Sorry, I didn't.
No, that's it.
So, David, you're in your Linden Ridge development, you have this kind of caveat on there in your as part of your development?
Well, in our developments, we didn't put a caveat on the lots. We required, we built certain fences, and we required our builders when they construct a house, if the fence is going to be in, to use one of our standards. The builders that we have attracted know us, they do this, and, you know, builders that we have not had the kind of experience we want with, we don't invite into. Private sales here in terms of some of the larger lots on the lake, and we provide those fence specifications to those individuals. We retain a client's deposit, which we do not release until all works are done, including the fencing. So if it's not done, the individual who owns the lot loses that compliance deposit. And then that compliance deposit is more than the value of the fence, because it does cover other issues as well. Our suggestion is that we will erect or cause to erect to have a continuous uniform fence within private property when a pathway or plate equipment is within 10 feet of the property line. It will be done to the satisfaction of the Director of Public Works. It will be on private property, responsibility of the private property owners to maintain the fence. So even if you have this in here if we have fencing saying, if somebody says, okay, I want to build a fence here because I have a pool, would you require it? We'll specify, that has to be, you know, a certain dimensions, and we'll specify what that is. And if the adjoining neighbor doesn't have a pool and wants to look out over the park, not through a fence or over a fence, we think that that's fine. But the fence that will be built will be contained in that lot, and, you know, where we've had fences and non-fences in our most recent development, Van Hall, it looks very attractive. There's some lots that have no fences, some lots have partial screens, some lots have a combination. They're in the top of the berm. Yeah. So the fences are very obvious.
It's very clear where the park ends and the private property begins because of the berm. It's a different kind of look and feel.
Well, I don't want to build fences to... you're either containing things or you're creating a barrier. I don't see that it's an issue with regards to building sheds. I mean, if it is an issue and somebody puts a shed on the city's park land, you have every right to say you move the shed.
I'm looking at Linden Ridge right now. To me, it looks like it's all continuous fencing designed all around the park property.
Where we would leave it open is when there's an open, expansive park. I'm looking at Google Maps now.
Okay. There's no fencing. Most of the properties do not have fencing screening the lake.
Madam Chair, I'm gonna state that we adopt the wording provided here by the developer. That the developer shall at no expense the city erect or cause to have erected a uniform continuous fence within the private property when a pathway or play equipment is within 10 feet of a property line to the satisfaction of the Director of Public Works and Director of Planning, Property, and Development. I'm not sure if we have to put authorize the city to file a caveat. I guess we should put that in there. Yes, and we'll leave also that the city authorize the city to file a caveat requiring future property owners to maintain the fence.
Yeah.
Donna provided me an explanation of clause 34, 54, sorry, which is our clause 16. So I'm satisfied with her explanation that she sent me this.
That would mean that we would add at the end, which may be reasonably considered and released on a phase by phase basis.
Yeah. Good. Any other responses from, I guess, the administration? Or? Oh, I wanted to add my stuff. I forgot.
Yeah. How long ago did you think of that?
That was like 5 hours ago.
Public property along the lake. Too late.
Okay. Okay. I'll do the use one first. Basically, I sent an email to Inga. 6:26. My sentiment was that the developer shall pay for a public art feature that shall be a bronze sculpture of Dr. Jose Rizal at a height of not less than 7 feet, installed on a Tyndall stone cenotaph with a base of not less than 8 feet in diameter, tapering to a diameter of 4 feet, the local height of 5 feet. The sculpture, this is just my wording, shall be formed and installed by a Manitoba bronze sculpture artist or one known in Manitoba. Final design to be approved by a community committee before installation. I had a brief discussion with the developer. Basically, we want to work with a local chapter on this, and I think it'll be a real amenity to honor Dr. Jose Rizal at the commercial mixed-use space.
Many months ago in the past, in doing that public art, and because our Winnipeg encourages this kind of consideration in terms of design of communities, new communities, we like it, we think it's an appropriate thing to do. What we would propose to do, though, is have it at a prominent location at Old Commonwealth and Dr. Jose Rizal Way. It makes sense that it would be at that location. And what we may be coming to streets with our parks, I'm not certain how we do this, but we may want to have slightly increased when we get into the detailed design in terms of the survey plan, the corner have a little bit of a plaza area where the sidewalk gets a little larger, that we would have the public art located there, with the understanding that once the public art is in place, it would be the responsibility of the city to maintain. Because it's something very difficult to, how would I allocate that in terms of the dump site? So it would be incorporated as part of maybe a right-of-way widening at the corner of the, where these two sidewalks meet here. Maybe what we do is we just basically enlarge the sidewalk a bit. Use that as the entrance to the development of the new corridor and at the intersection of the Old Commonwealth.
And then I also wanted to.
So with that, did you want to add in for the plan approval?
Yeah, submit to community.
About long-term maintenance or responsibility, we're just discussing
the community.
Who in the city or how would that
be? Well, I'm just telling you, there's a very strong chapter of the Knights of Rizal in Winnipeg, really strong, and they would embrace it. They'd be very involved with respect to that because
it's going to be. Is it going to be located?
We have an arts community here. You got to maintain the artwork. You can't just say, okay, we want to do this and not maintain the artwork in the city of Winnipeg.
Spontaneously thinking, whose responsibility would something like that be?
But in the agreement, it's going to say...
It's like a monument in the park, though. It's whoever...
Erected it.
Whatever group wants it, the benefits from having it there takes care of it, right?
Usually what the city's done is they've either set aside a maintenance fee or they've had a clear agreement stating that if it if you don't maintain it and it gets beyond a certain level, we have the prerogative to take it out. So as long as something like that can be set up, I think.
We can set that up, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Good. And then with respect to the twinning, because it's been such a huge issue for a number of years, and it's been really heightened in the last 2 years, even 3 years, and of twinning of Key Waiton and Dr. Jose Rizalway. Basically, I'd like to move a motion that was consistent with a precedent that was set in EK Transcona back in September 2006, where the city entered into a relationship with a local developer to twin plusies, and that there would be a payback schedule. Basically, the developer would upfront would pay for the development, the twinning of from Inkster to Jefferson, the twinning of Key Waiton and Dr. Jose Rizalway, and that the developer would recoup their costs over a certain period of time,
plus interest,
right?
Pegasus isn't built
yet. It's not built yet. It's going to sit there.
But you would have to do a transition north of Jefferson, and by the time you build the transition, you're almost at that intersection, and that's all that transition is all throwaway. You put a few more dollars into it, and you've got the roadway up to that intersection, and it's a natural dead end. You don't have to do the transition.
I'll move it then. Revise the motion from Inkster to Chief Pegasus.
I would just go to that residential intersection.
Oh, which one?
The intersection north of Jefferson.
Oh, okay.
Because that's as far as the developer only has. That's as far as the developer has to build his two lanes.
Oh, I see.
Right.
Okay.
Oh,
the channelization is
right.
Huge. I didn't know that. Okay.
No, he's pay. There's a clause in here for him to pay his share of that north piece.
Oh, okay.
But he doesn't have to construct it because the timing of Chief Pegasus. We're hopeful, but now it's unknown.
Okay, so how do you describe it? Do you need a sketch or something, or are you okay
with
the first intersection?
Well, the developer would pay for the twinning of Key Waiton and DJ, as you had referred to earlier, I think.
Yeah.
from Inkster
to the first intersection.
To the first intersection north of Jefferson Avenue.
Good. Okay.
And you wanted to say something about recoup the cost or something?
I just want to make sure, from the point of view of the commercial terms, that this is something that we can solves a problem for the city in terms of a private-public partnership with my clients. But, it has to be on commercial terms that we bring an agreement to our banker. Here's the deal, and we're paid back in 5 or 6 years from this by the city. So it's no net cost to us to do your lanes, but we're able, with our bank's agreement, front end that cost, you pay the interest, and basically, so the liability for paying it is not placed upon the developer. The liability for paying it, but I just have to make certain that when we take it to the banker, he doesn't say, "Oh, we're not doing this. Sorry, your funding for your project is removed, and we don't get anywhere." So it's got to be in commercial terms that we can bring back to the city from our financing component. If that's something that's acceptable to you, we could bring it to them, and I think that we could work out terms with the.
That's exactly our sentiment here.
So you have to put something.
We'll let Mr. Ravan and others, because they've dealt with the situation before. And it'll be vetted through our chief administrative officer, likely, and the chief financial officer. It'll be high up level, so.
Oh.
Okay.
also wanted to get lots and houses started as soon as we can next year. Our thinking is that what we would do is extend and complete this. Our first phase is in this area here. So in order to do that and make sure that we have all the work in place that we can actually start construction, we probably want to complete the two lanes here, but do this two lanes in here, and this done, and then do the second lane as we once we have our building permits possible in this area, and we do that before we go into our next phase. And just as long as the expectation is that we can implement your request over probably two construction seasons.
The planning.
Yeah, the planning, but the first construction season being the completion and connectivity between Jefferson Avenue.
So give me a date then in the future. What year?
Well, what we want to do, if we can get our development agreement finalized as soon as we possibly can in November, the engineers are slating, you know, the design work for construction to start in March. We're hoping that, you know, we would be able to finish this year. Or the end of June, and so I know if we concentrate, you know, building all of this stuff from the south up to here, our contractor is going to be so busy doing this, he's not going to be able to build any streets. So what we would like to do is complete the two lanes here in the first year, and then start to work on the balance of the street in the second year. What will happen then is it'd be really, we don't expect the first moves in here until the late fall of 2013, and it won't have really a significant impact on the area, but we could see completing this in 2014. You know, if we could stage it like that, it would probably help on costing as well.
Good.
So what we could do is come up with a staging proposal and work with Kim on that.
What we had at another location was the developer shall finance and construct the twinning of, in this case, from Inkster Boulevard to by and to the satisfaction of the Director of Public Works. I continue to do this?
Well, if that's what the wording, I just thought you'd see the.
Yeah, that's the wording here, I think, is we can paraphrase. I can continue to read. Yeah, there's a supplementary agreement.
Yeah, it doesn't
Kim, I'm just wondering if this should be a separate agreement from the development agreement.
Supplementary agreement.
Sorry?
I'm just wondering if this should be a separate agreement from the development agreement, because I need an agreement to bring to the bank to say
here's... And that's what was done with Plessy.
Yeah, we will. That's how it ended up with Plessy. So we're gonna adjust this wording to refer to a supplementary agreement.
Well, like the intent is the developer would pay for the 20-inch Q8 and then DJ intersection north of Jefferson Avenue.
And then
we'll determine by into the satisfaction of Director of Public Works.
Yeah.
And then we'll say that the city will reimburse the developer the city's share with interest at a borrowing rate acceptable to the city and the developer, and in accordance with terms approved by City Council prior to the enactment of the subdivision and rezoning? No?
I'm just concerned about that. Prior
to the
We're going to get a rate from our banker. That's the rate. And it's not something that, you know, we expect the city to come back, well, you know, we, you know, you're paying more than we would.
Well, we don't have the same kind of resources that the city has. You know, our rate is going to be so much above prime, and that's it. And our ability
rate that we can bring you is going to be the rate that we're provided by our bank.
Got guaranteed payment.
Yeah, and guaranteed
payments by the city, and because I don't think my clients want to have personal guarantees guaranteeing the city's work. So as long
as that's keep the risk down, therefore keep the interest rate a bit down.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, as the city is the guarantor, it should give us a better rate.
Yes.
So as long as the city is the guarantor and that's all in this agreement, I think that that's something that may be doable. I mean, I talked to my clients and it's a little bit intimidating, but I think that it's something that might be doable if the city is the guarantor.
That's the best. Put in the motion that either the CAO or the CFO be delegated the authority to negotiate the terms and conditions. CFO be delegated authority. That's the intent.
And so CAO and CFO.
Be delegated authority.
Again, as long as it's understood that I don't have CFO prosecutor to me saying, David, you know, 3% is all we're going to pay if we have to borrow money at 6. I want to make certain that it's understood. They're not negotiating with me and my clients. They're negotiating with the financial institution to finance.
Worded that way.
I understand, yeah, no net cost.
What about the reimbursement part?
Talked about we should probably capture the notion that that this agreement should be at no net cost to the developer. We should put that in there somewhere.
There you go.
That'll capture some of the sentiments.
Actually, that captures the whole sentiment. Yeah.
Sorry.
Yes, correct.
I gotta get a mic, co-signer.
Boy, am I in trouble later.
Your wife's still sitting here.
Yes. I don't have the same problems as Richard and Noah and has, so in terms of making excuses.
Yeah, right. It's a fun thing to do.
You might be the last one Patty will attend to.
I said 7.
Like 1 o'clock. Can you put that in there?
And 3 hours.
With the understanding.
Yeah, still
with
some people work under me right now.
Won't be anything open to have here.
I mean, that's just common sense.
Yeah.
It's only midnight. Oh, wait. It's Tuesday.
Yeah.
For an hour ago, you said it's
really?
12, not
well, the bar bars, the bar bars are open, but you won't get a beer at a meeting.
You've got some cool names. You'd have to take it back to the
room. We'll be blasted. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Right, because when's my last bus?
Heavy, I'll take that.
No, we're just about to vote. These are all amendments to the...
Everybody's leaving.
Huh?
It's just saying everybody's leaving.
Oh, I know. Oh, there's cleaning up, I think. For precinct T?
No, this one, like, just for the resolution.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Negotiated a deal, man.
Yeah, well, this is going to be the CAO.
Debbie, we're going to go now.
Have some challenges there?
We're going to have
motions.
Da, 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 da.
We're going to go into the precinct.
Representation.
Yep. There we go.
Okay, Madam Chair, I'll move that the, hold on here. Let me do this.
Okay. Way close up representations. Thank you very much for giving us 7 hours of your time.
We're not done yet. Hold on. No. Have a seat. I'll move this.
Representative.
Okay. Madam Chair, I'll move that the report of the Winnipeg Public Service be taken as read.
Aye. I'll move that the receipt of public representations be concluded.
All those in favor?
Aye. Now, on the matter of the precinct plan, we have a couple of amendments that were made. I lost my place here.
Just make reference to them. That's the ones we talked about.
Yeah. You got them?
Yeah.
Okay, so we'll move it with the amendments made as discussed earlier. And we've got notes, detailed notes from our clerk.
There was two amendments to the precinct plan.
Okay.
And so you're going to concur in the report of the Winnipeg Public Service as amended with those two.
I'll concur with the Winnipeg Public Service report as amended with those two amendments, Madam Chair. Mm-hmm. Aye. And then I'll go into the public.
Then you go into the public hearing.
Okay, on the subdivision rezoning.
You have to read that script. So the precinct plan, please note that the committee has made a recommendation on this matter that will now proceed to council.
On the subdivision rezoning, I'll move that the report of the Winnipeg Public Service be taken as read. I'll move that the receipt of public representation be concluded. Just some quick comments that I want to congratulate the developer and the applicant and everyone involved in the Waterford Green project. It's an awesome project. It's a lot, you know, Northwest Winnipeg needs a project like this, and I'm really happy that something like this is taking place. It's going to be a very unique project, as delineated by both Mr. Paliubeski and Mr. Mahey. I think everyone here is excited. Say that the developer really went out on a limb and did huge, extensive public consultations, which he's got to be commended for and should take credit for. And also, I want to congratulate the Winnipeg Public Service for their work and collaboration with the developer on this. They should they need a big pat on the back for making this happen. We've certainly got a can-do attitude here, and that's excellent. There were several amendments that we discussed at length over the last few hours. And we don't need to go through them again, but we'll move this as amended, Madam Clerk. And
Standing committee. Okay, all those in favor?
Aye.
Those carried.
And the following reasons, as indicated, be provided, and that the hearing with respect to this application be concluded. Aye. Move adjournment, Madam Chair.
Aye.
Congratulations to everybody.
Congratulations.
On that one. Very good job. Very good job.
Historical moments.
Yeah. Well, let's clean this, some of this up for Inga. We don't want her staying in.
He's got some stuff in here.